Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Dick Zondag, our guest today. Dick is president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. And we can cover the whole spectrum of things here. I think anytime Dick's on, we get questions about flowers and maybe trees, and we get questions about vegetables and seeds. And I'll tell you what, you have one of those questions, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or shoot a note to my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can post a comment there. And we'd love to hear from you. And Dick, welcome back. Great to have
thanks,
you with
Larry.
Us.
Yeah. Great to be back. I really enjoy getting on the radio and answering questions.
And things are going well at Jung's?
Things are going very well. I mean, the spring was a little bit slow with the weather and that sort of thing. But on the whole, we had a good spring. So I can't complain at all.
We have a question from Susan on our Facebook page. She says, I wonder whether one of the Garden Talk topics could be to find out how many listeners have successfully grown wisteria and how they get them to bloom. Mine bloomed finally after 17 years.
Yeah.
Got a few clumps last year, and then this year it really hit at large, big hanging clumps. She had heard 7 to 10 years, but 17 seemed to...
Wisteria is one of those things that, you know, we get questions on all the time because they do not like to bloom this far north. But the whole secret behind getting a wisteria to bloom is to braid the vines together like you'd braid hair. I know one of our early secretaries ran across the street. She lives across the street or lived across the street from me. And she said, Dick. Come on over here. He says, I've been answering this question for years, and I finally got my wisteria to bloom. And so what you do is you just braid those vines together, and then as they grow in diameter, they restrict the growth. Oh. And any plant that you put under pressure, under some kind of stress, will tend to throw it from its juvenile into its adult phase. And wisteria, because it's a vine, likes to grow like crazy. So, you know, just to braid the vines together, do a little root pruning on it. Don't fertilize it for sure, unless it's really yellow, so it needs a fertilizer. But braid the vines together, and inside of a couple of years, it will have grown together. It doesn't kill the plant. It just puts it under a little stress, and then you'll have the flowers. So, and the wisteria flowers are magnificent.
Oh,
those panicles
beautiful.
Of that lavender flower, they're just magnificent.
Yeah, and we have some photos posted, actually, on the Facebook page, so they really are beautiful.
Yep.
Colin in Minneapolis, Minnesota has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Colin.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks for calling.
Good, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I got a question about fish meal.
Okay.
I had a friend who used this last year, and his plants just blew mine out of the water. And I'm up in Minneapolis, and, you know, we got a late start with the spring, and I got a bunch of this fish meal, and I'm wondering... You know, I've heard, you know, this and that about when to use it, but I really have no idea. So I'm wondering if you could help me out with when to add it and what plants to add it and what it'll really do for me.
Okay, the sooner the better. When you're planting annuals, when you're planting perennials or anything, the quicker you get any kind of fertilization on the plants, the more benefit it will get out of it. It seems like it's the younger the plant when you fertilize it, the more effect your fertilizer will be. Fish meal... is a byproduct of the fishing industry. They compost the innards and that sort of stuff, and it has a pretty good balance of fertilizer to it, and so it's a great fertilizer for almost any plant.
Okay.
So the quicker the better.
All right.
I mean, you don't want to put a whole bag full around every annual, but, you know, just work some in the soil, and if your plants are planted, top dress it around the plant and then work it into the top couple of inches of soil and water it in, and you'll see a big difference, especially if your plants are under a little bit of stress because they're lacking fertilizer.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Colin. Appreciate it. Dan in Partyville, on to you. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I hope you can give me some ideas. Just before our strawberries are ripe enough, like the day before we're going to pick them, the ants eat them. Now, I don't want to use... a real, like, anything like 7, because I've read that strawberries are very, very hard to get chemicals off of because of the divots where the seeds are.
Yeah, and you have to, I mean, if you spray them, you have to pay attention as to when you can eat them. I mean, you can't spray them and eat them even if you wash them really well.
Right, so what can I do?
Antitractants that you can put down, that you put under a pie plate, or it has molasses and stuff in it that the ants will get stuck in. There are some baits that you can use with ants, but if there's sugar and stuff around and you've got ants around, they're going to head for it. But I guess that's what I would suggest, maybe putting out some pie plates with different sticky sweet things in it, and then the ants will go in there and they get stuck.
Like Karo syrup?
Yeah, Karo syrup or any kind of molasses, something like that.
It wouldn't have to be anything like go to a specialty store.
No. Any kind of a sweet, sugary type thing.
I'd have to cover it to keep it from getting wet.
Right.
Okay.
But what you do is you put a small pie plate, and then you put a big pie plate over it, and then you put little stones under the big pie plate so they can make it underneath and into the other one, and now that'll kind of attract them.
Now, we have sand in our yards. We have ants everywhere. Is that going to keep drawing ants to the strawberry bed?
You put it on the edge of the strawberry plant.
And
if you've got an area where you've got a lot of hills of ants, you could try doing it that way, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Give that a shot. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for calling.
Annie in Dalton, you are next. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
What can I do about those dastardly Japanese
yes.
beetles? I have a lot of roses in my yard, but I hesitate to spray because they also draw all the honeybees and
right.
bumblebees and things.
Well, there are, again, Japanese beetle traps
mm-hmm.
that you can put out. But if you're doing that, don't put them in the rose garden.
Okay.
Because the attractant in the trap will pull them in from everybody's yard. What you want to do is put them on the edge of the yard so they pull them away from the roses.
Okay.
So, and you'll be surprised how many Japanese beetles. Now, with Japanese beetles, they're kind of a new introduction. And usually what happens with new pests in an area is they tend to really take over for maybe 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And then after that, they kind of reach an equilibrium and they start to go down in population. The other thing you can do with Japanese beetles is if you've had Japanese beetle problems and you have those Japanese beetle larvae in the soil, you can use milky spore, which is a bacterium that the Japanese beetle ingests, and it paralyzes its digestive tract so that it kills them. And then once you've treated with that milky spore, the grubs will have eaten, and then the microorganism will grow in numbers and will stay there. So that once you've treated, or two or three times you treat, then your soil will be inoculated with this milky spore, and it will be a deterrent for the Japanese beetles.
Yeah.
But
They come in from all over the place.
Oh,
that's the problem.
If you put that trap in the middle of your rose garden, you're going to have more problems. So you've got to track
right,
them away
right.
from the rose garden.
Okay. All righty.
Okay.
So maybe upwind, so to speak. Do they
yep.
travel on the wind the easiest? Okay.
Yep. And there are insecticides you can use, too. A 7 is very effective against a Japanese beetle. Also.
Will 7 affect the other bugs, though, too?
I mean, that's the honeybees. That's the
yeah.
problem.
You have
pluses and minuses, I guess.
Yeah.
And so,
right.
you know,
right.
in my own garden, I don't use pesticides unless they're taking over. So,
yeah.
Right.
I guess you've got to use judgment when you're using pesticides. So,
yeah.
Well, they do tend to destroy my flowers pretty thoroughly.
Oh, yeah. The Japanese beetles come in, they just devour everything.
Yeah, they're nasty.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'll try that milky spore. I haven't heard of that one yet. So,
all right.
Well,
thanks
we'll
for calling.
See. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate the call. And Carrie in Menominee Falls, on to you now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I have two rows, climbing roses, that
okay.
I purchased from Young many years ago.
Okay.
They were the Canadian series, John Cabot and John Nolan.
Okay.
Growing beautiful.
Okay.
Oh, just, people would just stand back and look, because especially the John Cabot.
Yeah.
Now, I let that go now as a rose bush.
Okay.
You know, not on a trellis anymore.
Right.
But all of a sudden, these last 2 years, I'm getting not black spot, but leaves are yellowing.
Okay, the area between the veins are starting to yellow, or is it spots?
No, just the little leaves when they come out.
Okay.
The leaves, and I didn't know. I did do a black spot 6 weeks ago.
Okay.
Insecticidal with some fertilizer and that didn't seem to do
black
much.
Black spot, yeah, black spot should not be a problem yet. It's really
shouldn't
too
be
early.
That
it's
got to be. But I took then I had an extra thing of iron, and I put that on the John Cabot, and it seems to be coming around now.
Yeah. Well, what I would do is I would get a fertilizer that says Evergreen fertilizer on it. Evergreen fertilizer has the chelated iron and manganese. It sounds to me like you've got a nutrient deficiency and not a disease.
Maybe.
And
okay.
Just treat the area around the plant with a fertilizer that says for acid-loving plants. Now, it doesn't make the soil acid. It just has the nutrients in that the plant can't take up, that the acid-loving plants.
Like Miracle?
Miracid is a very good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, vinegar acid is a very good one.
Yep, so give that a try. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We have an email from Margot who says, I have a question about lupins. The flowers on my lupins were so beautifully straight and tall, and then one day most decided to make a U-turn downward, after which they started growing straight up again, creating an on its side S shape.
Right.
These lupins self-seeded in a site that's sunny all morning. What might be causing that problem?
You have a variety that gets a very tall spike on it. And what happens is they're growing in the cool of the spring, and then we all of a sudden get a wet, warm streak, and the plant starts to grow like crazy, and then it turns cool again, and the plant can't support the weight of the upper part of the bloom. What I would recommend is get a plant support, and about halfway up that lupine, you know, the lupine expands from the bottom to the top, and so once the flower has expanded, maybe put a some type of a plastic wrap between that stake support and the plant, and that will help support the weight. It's a problem where you get a growth spurt and the weight of the top of the flower is too heavy for the flower stalk, and so it bends over, but then it stiffens up and starts growing again. And so they've bred these lupines, so you get just really beautiful spikes on them, but sometimes the type of weather that we have causes those growth spurts, and then the plant isn't strong enough to hold the weight. So that's I'm almost sure that's the problem.
Here's one you may or may not know. Heather in Madison wonders how to find organic hay or mulch in the Madison area.
Oh, boy. You know, we have hay or mulch at our garden centers, but I don't think it's organic. Although with most hay and straw, farmers very seldom fertilize or spray or do things to their hay or their straw. And so
I'm not sure
that you can call it OMRI organic, but I don't think there's a whole lot of fertilization or pesticides used in hay or straw.
Karen in Edgerton, it is your turn. Hold on a second here. Let's go to you. Hi, Karen. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
With all of the rain and my watering my herb garden before all that, I've got little black spots on my mint, the sage, the oregano, and I'm wondering if there's a way, if that's going to keep spreading, or how to treat it, and if the herbs are edible now.
Well, the disease probably is not going to affect the edibility of the plant. A lot of these septoria leaf spots, I'm not sure that it's it may not be septoria, but there are a bunch of leaf spots that happen when we have a rainy spell. And the life cycle of a fungus is that it starts as a spore, which is a little seed with no storage tissue in it. Like a seed has the the carbohydrates stored in it, but a spore does not. And what happens is that spore germinates in the dew. And if the germ tube from that spore, the little root that comes out of the spore, makes it into the leaf before the dew dries off in the morning, you've got the disease. Where in a normal spring, where we've got some dew, but it dries off before the before that little germ tube gets in the leaf, then you don't have trouble with the disease. And that's why when we have a very dry summer, you have very little trouble with diseases. Where if you have a wet summer, we know that we're going to have to stock up on the fungicides. You know? And so I guess what I would do is have your herbs growing as much as you can in the morning sunlight. Grow them so that you get good air circulation around them. If you've got a particular sprig that has a lot of the leaf spot on it, take it off and either eat it or get rid of it, because that will be the initial inoculation for further down the road if the disease does spread. But spreading them out and getting them so they dry out in the morning will do as much as anything to help you get rid of diseases.
There you go. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin, our guest here. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in our conversation, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. You can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, post a comment there, or call us at 1-800-642-1234. And Sandra in Hazelhurst called us, so let's go to Sandra. Hi, Sandra. Sandra, are you there? We lose her? Oh, hold on a second. Let's try again. All right, now we've got you.
Okay. I'm doing fine today, but I have a question about my dwarf apple trees.
Okay.
They are just loaded with apples.
Okay.
And they're also producing lots and lots of suckers from the bottom.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, when is the time to cut the suckers off?
Okay.
And how much fertilizer do I get them, and when?
Okay. The answer to the question on the suckers is right now you want to cut those off as close to the trunk as possible. Those are coming from below the graft union. With the dwarf trees, the rootstocks that we have sometimes have compatibility problem. Not that the tree is going to die or anything, but if there's a little bit of stress in that graft union, the plant starts to grow from below the graft union, and those suckers are just the rootstock, and so you want to keep those off as much as possible and not let them grow.
Okay.
As far as fertilization of the tree, you can do that any time, and the way that you tell whether the tree needs fertilizer is when the leaves are a nice dark green color, the plant really doesn't need fertilizer. If you're going to fertilize it, the feeder roots are from two-thirds the distance to the drip line of the tree. Drip line of the tree is where the water would come off if the tree is an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And then one-third beyond the drip line of the tree. And so that's where the roots are that will use the fertility. Now, a heavy load of fruit is not a good thing for an apple tree. It depletes the reserves of the tree. Now, you've still got the apple drop that will come probably in late June, early July. And if the fruit doesn't have a seed inside of it, all of a sudden you'll see a lot of little apples fall to the ground. And it's a natural way that the plant has to get rid of the fruit that doesn't have a seed inside of it. If the fruit persists on past the middle of July, what I would suggest is getting out there and thinning it down, just running your fingers through the tree like a comb and getting some out. Because if you let all of that fruit go on to maturity, what happens is that the fruit will be small because the tree can only produce a certain amount of carbohydrates to fill those apples out. And the other thing that it will do is it will sap the tree's reserves. And so the next spring, it may not throw many blossoms.
Yeah.
Or even when it throws blossoms, it won't form much fruit. And so what will happen is you'll get into a cycle where you get no fruit one year, a lot of fruit the next year, no fruit one year, another. Mm-hmm. So it'll just every other year it will produce. But by getting out there and thinning down the fruit so that you only have a, you know, the right amount of fruit on the tree, that will help. Get the tree into an annual bearing thing. And the other thing is that if you get 2 to 5% of the blossoms on an apple tree to set, you're going to get a nice amount of fruit. So you don't have to have a large number of those fruit set.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Got an email from Jeff in the University of Wisconsin-Madison Botany Department. Just a little note, there's a blooming Titan arum, the world's largest flower, in the UW-Madison Botany Department greenhouse right now. So if you're in the area, they're worth stopping by. It opened Wednesday, so it isn't as stinky as it could be, but it's still quite a smell, and it is quite a smell, Dick.
Those things are unbelievable, how big a flower they have and how stinky they get. And the stink part of it is the attractant. I mean, it's to attract the Karen beetles in, and they feed on it, and then they go to another one. And so it's a sort of a self-preservation thing. I don't know. I wonder if they've got a webcam, because they've had webcams, so you don't even have to go to the greenhouse. But those plants really stink when they're in full bloom. I mean, the whole greenhouse is just...
And it's
like dead, rotting flesh. I mean, it really is bad news.
But it's fun to see.
They're just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So it's in the UW-Madison Botany Department greenhouses right now. Judith will probably check and see if they've got a webcam. If they do, we'll post it on our
And they don't
Facebook
bloom
page.
Every year either. I mean, it takes several years for the bulb to get big enough to throw a bloom. So, they're something else.
Dorothy in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello. Well, my problem is maybe 15 years ago or so, I purchased bittersweet plants from Junks and had prolific berries, but then it got all tangled up and I cut it back. That is 2 years ago. Nothing's happened since. When could I expect some fruit?
The year that you cut them back, you're cutting all your flowers off, because bittersweet, fruit trees, most woody ornamentals blossom and fruit on the wood that grew last summer. They lay down the flowers in September of the year prior. And so if you did it 2 years ago, last year, you wouldn't get any fruit. I would say that if you don't do a lot of pruning this spring, you should have fruit this summer.
You think so?
Yep.
I hope so. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Email from Jane in Rice Lake. I've been using a permanent mulch on the garden for 30 years. It has beautiful weed-free soil, but unfortunately, some nearby shade trees are blocking the sunshine, also sending their roots into this garden. So I've moved the vegetable garden to a new location. Any idea what I could plant in this shady garden with its rich soil?
No, I think I would get a chainsaw and cut the tree down.
It's probably a neighbor's tree.
It's probably a neighbor's tree. You'd have to do it at night when he was sleeping. asparagus does do fairly well in a semi-sunny area. If you want to grow fruit, any of the currants do really well in a shady area. You know, some of the fruits do all right in a semi-shady area. They're not going to give you as much as they do in full sunlight, but any of the brambles, probably, they're not going to be as productive as they are in the sunlight, but they will do that. As far as garden vegetables, boy, I'd have to go back and do some research. I think most of the garden vegetables require full days or as much, you know, half or better days sunlight. Maybe what you could do is talk to your neighbor, if it is your neighbor's tree. Well, see, the root system is a big problem, too, especially if it's a maple tree and the roots are really shallow. I have a flower garden next to a maple tree, and every year I dig it out, and there's roots coming back into it. So, you know, if it's a maple tree, it's really a difficult situation. But, as far as vegetables, I'm afraid you're in trouble with a shade garden.
Sarah emailed us to say that she's heard both Jungs and Youngs for the name of your garden business in Wisconsin. Are they the same or different?
Okay. About 15 years ago,
about 15.
When the Young family and the Zondag family split the company in two, the horticultural part of the business is now Jung Seed Company. The agronomic. The farm seed part of it is young seed genetics. So I have that. You know, before that, there was no corporate pronunciation of that four-letter word.
Right. Okay.
It is Jung on the horticultural side.
David Madison wonders, says, winter squash hasn't germinated yet. Should I be patient or replant?
I think replant. See, with the wet, cool weather that we had, because those seeds have a huge piece of starch in them, if they don't come up right away, there are microorganisms in the soil that will attack them. Now, non-organic gardeners sometimes treat the seed with Captan before they plant it, and that seems to protect them for a little while. I guess what I would suggest right now is if you've still got some seed, put it in a paper towel and put it in a warm spot for a couple of days until the seed starts to swell, and then put it in the soil, and that'll hasten the germination. You can also do that in early spring if you want to avoid that. Pre-germinate the seeds. You know, you have to, you know, when the little seed root starts coming out of the seed, you have to get it in the soil because they don't like to be transplanted. They don't, that seed root doesn't like to be disturbed. But if you get the seed swelling and the little seedling root coming out of the seed, if you planted it very shortly after that, it'll hasten the germination by probably 3 or 4 days, actually.
All right. Let's go to Roger in Long Grove, Illinois now. Roger, hello.
Hi. Question about fertilizers on new plants. I heard Old T you can use, or Miracle-Gro. And then how often do you know when to water the plants?
Okay, as far as fertilization, tea has tannins in it, and it will acidify the soil, and in most cases that will make the nutrients more available. I don't think there's a whole lot of nutrient power in tea, but it's not a bad thing. I think manure tea would do more.
Yeah.
That's where you put manure in a nylon stocking and soak it overnight and then put that on. But as I said at the very first question, you know, they found that when you're planting vegetable plants or annual seedlings, the quicker you get a shot of fertilizer on them, the more benefit they will get out of it. So if you fertilize them the same day you plant them and get them off to a good start, it's going to do a lot more than planting them and then a week later putting the same amount of fertilizer on. It seems like those plants will blast out of that potting mix that they were grown in better and get into that native soil, and it seems to give them a good shot to get started, you know. And so, you know, when I'm planting my annuals and my vegetables, I always follow right up with a good garden fertilizer that will get them growing. And you can kind of test it yourself, you know, with in a garden, you treat half of them and don't treat the other half, and see how you do. But the quicker you get that that fertilizer on after you plant them, the faster you're, and the more results you get out of it.
These are perennial plants I'm talking about.
Okay, so perennials, as soon as you take the mulch off, if you've mulched them, or as soon as the plants start emerging from the ground, just working a little bit of fertilizer in the soil, or better yet, doing it in the fall when they go dormant, because the roots of a plant never go dormant. As long as the soil isn't cold, they can take those nutrients up. So sometimes in October or November, putting a light fertilization of maybe bone meal or something that gives the roots a good overwinter fertilization will keep those roots growing. And then in the springtime, put a like a 5-10-5 or a 5-10-10, something that will just give them a little bit of push to get started.
All right, we're talking a newly planted, you know, a flower plant I just bought, you know. Should I use Miracle-Gro when I water it, right? Is that going to hurt it?
No, that would be excellent. That's what I would do.
And when you're talking the fall, though, would you still use Miracle-Gro then?
I would look for something where the first number is a little lower than Miracle-Gro. See, what happens if you overstimulate a plant in the fall, it reverses the dormancy that the plant is going into. You have to wait until probably late October, early November, when that plant is fully dormant, so that you're not going to get any reversal of the dormancy, you know, and we don't want to encourage the plant to start growing again. So, you know, that late fertilization has to be done after the plant has gone fully dormant. But, you know, if your soil is at all marginal in nutrients, or if it's a newly planted plant, the roots will be taking up those nutrients all winter long, and it'll be ready to go in the springtime.
So the Miracle-Gro should be used with caution.
Well, not with caution. I mean, it's a great fertilizer for a plant when it's in growth, but when it's starting to go dormant or when it's completely dormant, it has too much nitrogen. The first number is too high.
Yeah.
So, you know, use the Miracle-Gro when they first start to grow and maybe through the months of July and into early August, but then stop using it and try to find a fertilizer where the first number is much smaller than the next two.
There you go.
The phosphorus and potassium are for root growth.
Yep.
I tend to water plants too much. Can you give me some guidelines on watering plants? Like, I have these Agastache, and the man, the place where I bought them said, when you see the leaves turning yellow, you're watering them too much. I don't know.
Yeah, well, when they're first established, you want to water maybe twice a week, especially if you don't get rain. If you get a good amount of rain, then you don't have to water them. After that, the rule of thumb is an inch a week. And so if you don't get any rain and it's hot, you can water them. And when you water them heavy, and then you let them dry out between watering. So what he was telling you is happening is when the soil pores are filled with water, the roots can't breathe, and they start suffocating. And so what you want to do is you want to water them heavy so that the soil is completely soaked, and then let them dry out between the watering. So if you're watering every day, every other day, every third day, on an established plant, you're watering too much. What you're doing is you're encouraging the roots to stay shallow. You want the roots to go deep. And so it's the same way with the lawn. You don't want to water, you know, I guess with almost anything, there are very few things that you want to water on a real regular basis. You want to water them heavy and then let them dry out between waters. It's house plants. It's the only thing that's different is when you plant them, when they're newly planted, then the roots aren't out as far, and you have to keep that soil moist in the root zone area. But once they're established, an inch a week is probably optimum. But once they're really established, they're down deep enough so that if you water every other week and you give them a good rain or a good watering, that's plenty.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have an email from Joe in Portage County. I have some of my summer-bearing raspberries that are turning brown. Most are doing well, but I'm concerned I have the beginnings of a bigger problem. What could cause them to individual stems to die back?
Yeah, it sounds like cane borer.
Yeah.
And what you got to do is you got to check down near the ground and see if there's a little hole. In fact, some of them that are turning brown, what you should do is clip them off and then cut that cane, not horizontally but vertically, so that you can see what the insides of the cane looks like. And if it looks like there's a tunnel in there, what I would do is any cane that shows that symptoms, cut it off and burn it, because the borer is in there, and there are really very few insecticides, and even the insecticides that are effective are not effective once they get into that. And so any of them that show symptoms have a borer in it, you want to get rid of it. So that's a pretty serious thing in raspberries.
Kevin in Tomahawk has a question for you, so let's go to Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm looking for an idea on how to stop the slugs from eating the hostas up. I'd prefer a non-chemical way, but I'm open to any suggestions at all.
Okay.
And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, there are baits that you can use, and you do the same thing that I told the guy with the ants. There are slug baits that have apple pumice in them that attract them, and they eat it. The one that I really like to do is the beer mm-hmm. thing. You put a small pie plate in the ground with the edges of the pie plate right at ground level, and then you put beer in that, and then you put another one over the top, and then you fill the one that's in the ground, or you don't fill it. You make it about halfway up, and the yeast in the beer, I guess, attracts the slugs in, and they go out peacefully. You know, they die nicely. The only problem is I have trouble making it from the house to the hosta with any beer left. But yeah, beer works really good to attract them.
Sharon and Butler, we go to you next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a clump river birch. It's about 8 foot tall. And I came home one day and looked outside, and I live in a condo, and the weed and feed people were here.
Oh.
Yes. It's really stressed. All the leaves are pointing down. The ends have produced all kinds of leaves that are all curled and weird looking.
Okay. I guess what I would suggest is fertilize the plant at the drip line of the tree and water it good.
Water it well.
Yeah, river birch likes to have wet feet, and they do all right on dry soils like you'd have there. But if the tree isn't dead already, it's probably just sick. And just giving it a shot of fertilizer and giving it a bucket full or two buckets full of water every week. Letting it dry out between waterings will get it growing again, and it probably will make it out.
You're saying a bucket full of water?
Yeah, just around the tree, or just take your hose and let it soak the area. So
unfortunately, there's no hose here, so I'm going to have to manually do it.
Okay. Well, then just put some fertilizer out. You know, it's been pretty rainy lately,
yeah.
And the water will take those nutrients down to the root system and encourage the tree to grow. I guess it's just going to have to outgrow it. I think with those weed and feeds, if the tree is alive at all, it may be sick, but I don't think it's critical. So just getting it to grow might jerk it right out of that.
With the leaves pointed down, and they're almost folded on themselves, does that mean they're going to fall off?
Probably, but what will happen is if the tree isn't severely injured, the buds that are in the axils of those leaves will re-sprout and the tree will start growing again. And that's what you're trying to do. You know, the stimulatory things for a plant are watering, fertilization, and pruning. And so what you're doing is you're stimulating a tree to grow by adding fertilizer and water if it gets hot and dry.
What kind of fertilizer? Because I have a big thing of plant fertilizer here, for
almost houseplants. Almost anything would work.
Anything?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wow, I would think with the growth hormone stimulant that is killing it, obviously, which my brother explained to me is in the...
Right, that's what's in the 2,4-D and some of those things.
The fertilizer stimulant's okay.
You bet, because
right.
The plant will grow out of it. I mean, if you're anemic, you got to start eating to outgrow that anemia, right?
Right.
And it's the same way with the plant. The plant has been injured, and what you want it to do is grow some good, healthy tissue so that it makes more carbohydrates so the tree becomes healthy.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
thanks
very much for calling. Dick, your company is not involved in alfalfa seeds or selling alfalfa seeds, is it not?
It's not my part of the business. You know,
yeah.
the young seed genetics part of the business is in the agronomic business. We do have a small amount of agronomics in one of our catalogs, Shumway, but they're the real old-fashioned type seeds, the open pollinated stuff. So no, we're not into the
technically
agronomic
not
crops.
Even your company then.
No.
Okay. We have Annie in La Crosse with a question, and Annie, we'll get to you in just a minute. Dick Zondag is president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dick Zondag, our guest on Garden Talk. Annie in La Crosse up next with a question for you, Dick. So let's go to Annie. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Say, I planted some juniper, the low-growing, you know, little blue flowers in my front yard to try to cover up the grass so I don't have to mow so much.
Right.
And I have a butternut tree out there. It's pretty stinky.
Yes.
And they don't seem to be doing much of anything.
Yeah,
is there...
I think junipers are one of those plants that are susceptible to the juglone from the butternut, from the walnut family, which butternut is a walnut tree.
Yeah.
And there really is nothing that you can do
nothing to make them grow a little bit more.
Right. I haven't got the pamphlet that we have at the garden center on plants that are somewhat tolerant of walnut trees. But if you drop me a line at dick@junkseed.com with your mailing address, I'll send you that pamphlet. It has some ideas on things. I know that Lily of the Valley, Dicentra, which is Bleeding Hearts.
They work.
You know, there are a few things that are sort of a tolerant of the juglone, but a juniper is not one of them. And the only way that you could get junipers to grow there is to take a chainsaw to the butternut tree and then to put activated charcoal in the ground to take up the chemicals that are in the ground. It takes a while because the substance that is the natural herbicide not only comes out of the leaves when it rains, but it comes out of the root system and it's in the wood. So if you ground it up, you'd have to get rid of the wood, and it's there to compete against everything that's planted underneath it. So, yeah,
I ask you another question about the butternut tree?
Sure.
Okay, my tree is huge. It's very old. Mm-hmm. I've been in the house for 22 years, and okay. It's probably been there for 50 or 60.
Okay.
The middle of the tree has sort of rotted out.
Right.
But there's still a huge trunk and enormous leaves. So right. Is there anything I should do? I mean, I like my tree. It shaped my house.
If it's a crack right down the middle of the trunk that's going from the ground up or from the middle up, one of the things that you can do is to take, and the guy that cuts the tree down will swear at you, but you can take a long wood drill and drill perpendicular to the crack. You know, so you're not drilling with the crack, you're drilling the opposite way of the crack, and then get a threaded rod, you know, probably a half or a three-quarter inch threaded rod, and then put a bolt or, a nut on the end of the bolt with some washers on it, and then on the other side you do the same thing. You have to have a rod that goes all the way through the tree, and what that does is it keeps the tree from swaying too much in the wind. And what happens eventually is that the tree will cover that up, and so whoever takes the tree down when they start a chainsaw, especially if it's 20 or 30 years from now and they hit that threaded rod, they'll see some.
They'll not be happy.
No, but it's just mainly a structural way of strengthening the structure of the tree.
Well, the tree is pretty hollow in the middle. It's not just a crack. I mean,
it still will do that. It will. Instead of having two pieces swaying in the wind, you know, and one piece falling off, they will have to sway together. It's just basically a way of making, of welding the two pieces together again, I guess, is what you'd say.
I understand. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Sal wonders, why does my friend recommend Epsom salts watered into soil around tomato plants? He says it helps to keep tomatoes looking good.
Epsom salts has magnesium in it, and magnesium is a central part of the chlorophyll molecule, and so it keeps them nice and green. That's basically why. Magnesium, yeah. Epsom salt is calcium, magnesium, something or other. But it has minor micronutrients in it that if your soil is marginal in those micronutrients, it'll help the plant grow.
Ken in Mayville, on to you now. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I have a couple quick questions about grapes and clematis.
Okay.
We purchased a house last summer. We're just getting our garden going again this year. We had a clematis that we cleaned up around and everything. And we have two different clematises. One seems to be climbing just fine. This one here, we can't get it to climb. It's just kind of looking weak. And it's growing, but every time we put it up, it decides it wants to go down.
Clematis like two conditions. They like a very sweet soil. So a cup full of lime around the base of the plant worked into the soil every other year will help. A little phosphate, superphosphate, bone meal, something like that also will fertilize the plant, and it likes a cool soil. So just planting some annuals over top of it or planting a perennial at the base there to keep the soil cool, to shade the soil, will help you there. So
That's what we did there.
That should help that. You know, just a little fertilizer and some lime would do that.
Okay. Now, grapes, real quick, we want to plant some grapes. I've found the varieties at Young's. My question is, can I plant them now and then do a trellis system next year? The trellis that I want to build is just going to be a little bit above my budget right now, and I don't want to, get it going and just wondering if I can actually get it trellised next year, if they'll
sure,
be all right.
Sure. If you were doing that, that's what I would do. And we do have grapes in pots now. The bare root stuff is pretty mm-hmm. much done for the year. That has to be planted when the plants are dormant. So, but yeah. we do have grapes in pots now, and getting that root system established, what you're basically going to do is get a central cane growing with arms coming off from it, and it takes too long to describe the system
sure,
on
sure,
the radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take too much time. But we do have pamphlets in the garden center, and they can explain to you. Basically, the rule of thumb is keep those grapes as close to the root system as possible, and there's a system of doing that. Mm-hmm. If you don't prune them every year, they get another year's farther growth out, and the grapes will become smaller and smaller. So it's okay. a matter of keeping the fruiting wood as close to the root system as possible. Yeah, if you're even if you don't have a trellis there, it's good to get a year's worth of growth before you start trellising them.
All righty, thank you.
Yep. All right, thanks a lot for calling. UW Extension's got a nice
oh, yeah,
publication.
They've got a great one on grapes, too, yeah.
Yeah, growing grapes in Wisconsin at the Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store. That's a really good
yep.
one, too.
Yep.
Let's go to Frank in Arborvita next. Hi, Frank. Thank you for calling.
Good day, Dick and Larry.
Good morning.
Would you talk some about petunia culture? I've been growing petunia from seeds for a number of years.
Okay.
But my containers, my window boxes, don't look like...
Like one, the pictures, one, like, right?
No, exactly.
You know, the pictures are really pretty, and you can grow petunias like that. I guess what I would recommend is using the newer varieties. If you've got a window box, the wave petunias, some of the serfinas. We even had some cutting-grown petunias in the catalog this year. So start with a really good variety of petunias. And then in window boxes, you have to have a soil that's about half organic matter and half soil. So the soil mix that I would use is a third sand, a third peat, and a third garden soil. And then to that, I would add probably Osmocote, or use a little bit of fertilizer every time you water them, or at the very least every other week. And petunias, those newer types of petunias, are really pretty simple.
Now, how close would you plant them in a window box, and do you pinch?
Yeah, if you're planting wave petunias, I would say every 18 inches is close enough. I mean, they grow like crazy. And when you plant a plant out, if it's just a single stalk, for sure pinch the top out, because plants have what are called apical dominance. If that center bud grows, it inhibits the side buds from popping. Or if you take that center bud out and you get rid of the apical dominance, you get three or four branches breaking to make the plant fuller, and it'll grow much nicer. And then as the petunias start to go over the hill, take a head shears to them and fertilize them, and in about 2 or 3 weeks they'll be back in their full glory. In
wow.
August, I guess. That's about August or early September, and then they'll make a nice fall display again.
Thank Great. You.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Lynette in Germantown up next. Hi, Lynette.
Hi. I've got two real quick questions. First one regarding a petunia... peony, excuse me.
Okay.
Is it possible, I swear this particular plant used to be pink, and it's white this year.
You've hit the one question that I have never heard a reasonable answer to, and that's if plants change color. And, you know, you hear this where, a seed fell to the ground and a new plant grew. I mean, theoretically speaking, the color of the plant is determined by the genetics of the plant. And when we used to grow fields and fields of glads, you know, if you plant red glads and you plant the bulblets from that, you get red glads. You've hit the one question that as a sort of knowledgeable person in horticulture, I have never heard a good explanation. And it must happen because... you know, it does. I guess the most reasonable one that I've ever heard was that the genetics that control the color of the plant are in an area where they're not stable and they mutate back to the normal color of a peony. But even that is hard for me to swallow. So I'm sorry. You hit the one that I can't help you with.
Okay, so I'm not hallucinating.
No.
Okay.
No.
The other question is, I've got knockout roses that have just completely defoliated. Can
herbicide? Did you use any kind of herbicide in the area? Well, that would be my first knockouts are such, I mean, they have revolutionized the rose business for people that don't want to put a lot of effort into it. I mean, you plant them, they're very hardy, they don't get diseases. I mean, they don't get the black spot diseases. You don't have to fertilize them as much, and they just keep blossoming all summer long. As far as a sudden defoliation, it has to be some environmental thing, whether it's a herbicide.
Or your neighbor's herbicide.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you get a hot day and if they're spraying the grass or spraying the weeds, it will volatilize. Although I've never seen it defoliate a plant. I've seen it made the leaves look sick.
On all leaves, I mean, they're all leafy and like a bug just completely.
Okay. I guess what I would do is fertilize. You know, give them a shot of fertilizer, prune them back. Get them back to within 6 inches of the soil. As I said, watering, fertilization, and pruning will stimulate a plant to grow. So, fertilize them, prune them back to 6 inches, you know, take all that stuff off. Roundup is very well known for causing roses to stunt, but I guess that's what I would do. Start the plant over and see if you can rejuvenate it that way.
Dick Zondag, our guest today on Garden Talk, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening in to this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. So we're covering pretty much everything. We've talked about vegetables and fruits, and we've talked about trees and shrubs, and we've talked about flowers. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, email talk at WPR.org, or go to our Facebook page and post a comment there at The Larry Mueller Show. And be sure to click that you like it. Marilyn in South Range, you are next. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, and thank you for answering or trying to answer this question. I have a horrible horsetail problem, and I had it in my strawberries, which I did get from Jung's, and really happy about it this year. We had some horrible problem with the soil, but this year the plants are doing well.
Good.
Except for the horsetail, which what I did is totally dug down to the clay because we're up in northern Wisconsin.
Sure.
And got down and took out buckets and buckets and buckets of that. So what I did is I had to pull the strawberry plants, which I had, and they're doing fine. But I'm kind of concerned about, like, the when you first plant them, you have to make sure that they're at a certain height. And, you know, when you get the instructions, it tells
right.
you.
The crown of the plant, where the roots of the strawberry come out and the leaves start to grow, that crown has to be right at soil line.
Okay, so if the roots are in the ground and I can see the crown,
right.
then that'll be okay again.
Yeah, because the crown, as the plant grows in years, the crown tends to come out of the ground a little farther. And that's why when you're renewing a planting of strawberries, because the strawberries spread and they become actually a mat of plants, what you want to do is mow off the oldest plants that you have and then take the rototiller down that area so that you're taking the old plants out, because they're going to be the least productive. But that's what you do every, like, 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And
The other thing is, what would you suggest for mulching so that I can make sure that possibly I can control this horsetail?
Oh, that's a hard one. The mulch that I would use is a clean hay or straw, you know, one that the farmer certifies that there was no weed seeds in it, because if you use a straw or a hay, marsh hay is probably the best, because you know that the weeds that grow in the marshes won't germinate in the dry soils that we have. But clean hay or straw, and then you just rake the hay or the straw off and leave it in between the rows to act as sort of a mulch to keep the weeds from coming up in the in between the rows with the horsetail. And I, you know, I try to stay away from pesticides when I'm on WHA or on the public radio. But with the horsetails that are above the strawberries, if you can selectively paint Roundup on those horsetails and not get any on the strawberries, it will take the horsetails out.
Okay.
You know, it's just take a roller. I've even seen some people put on a waterproof glove and then put a cotton glove over it and then just dip your cotton glove in the Roundup and then just pull the weeds through your hand. And just get a little bit on the leaves. You'll be surprised how well that will control it. As I said before, I'm not a big believer in overusing pesticides. I very seldom use herbicides in my garden. But for some of these really aggressive weeds in a crop like strawberry, where it's really hard to control them, if there's a way of getting that glyphosate herbicide on the plants that you want to take out and not on the strawberries, it does an unbelievable job.
Well, somebody else suggested Finale, but I've had a dickens of a time finding it.
Well, Finale is, I think Finale, if I'm not mistaken, has glyphosate in it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think Finale has both the glyphosate and the surfactant, so that it goes on easier. But
it'll work too.
Yeah, any glyphosate herbicide works really well on that.
Thanks for calling, Marilyn. Good luck, Teresa in Mundelein, Illinois. You are next. Hi, Teresa.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. We have a mugopine near our front door, and it doesn't look very healthy. And I'm wondering what kind of fertilizer it might need. And also insect control. Like a couple of years ago, we had another mugo there, and it had several clumps of bugs on it, and it died.
They're the... I'm getting brain freeze. Again, dick@junkseed.com if you want to know what the name of the insect is. But
I don't know the name.
Yeah, and I don't. It escapes me now. It'll probably come to me two callers after you hang up. But
I'll mention it then.
the fertilizer that you want to use is something like muriacid or something that says evergreen fertilizer on it. It has the manganese and the iron in it.
Uh-huh.
And with mugopines, if you want to keep them small, you pinch the candles as they expand, the new candles as they're expanding.
Uh-huh.
And I think there are some synthetic pyrethroids that will handle this pine shoot moth, I think is what it is.
Uh-huh.
And they form black clusters around the tips of the things, and then they destroy the new shoots as they're coming up. But there are several insecticides that will take that out, but you have to read the label to see whether it's labeled for that or not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so read the label, and I have to choose the product myself. Is that right?
Yeah, I think seven. There's a one called eight, which is a I think it's kind of a play on the seven, but
yeah.
It doesn't have seven in it. It has pyrethroids in it, which are a little bit safer than the seven. But I think even malathion will help with that particular insect. I think that's a pretty easy one to take out.
Oh, what is that again?
Malathion.
Okay.
All right.
I think most garden centers, if you take a piece of the plant into the garden center, or you could take a piece off and put it in a container and send it to us at the seed company, we could identify it and get you back the insecticide that you should use.
There you go.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. I got a Facebook question from Michael. A question about an ash tree between the street and sidewalk in front of my home, planted by the city of Milwaukee years and years ago. The roots are lifting the turf around them, making it hard to mow around. Would it harm the tree at all if I dug up the turf and exposed the tops of the roots?
No, because what will happen is the roots will grow like a bark epidermis on them if they're exposed to the, you know, exposed to the air, and so it's not going to hurt the tree. I think that's fine. You know, if you want to expose it and just put some. The other thing that a lot of people do is they will put a landscape edging around the tree when that starts to happen, and then they plant flowers or a ground cover around the tree, so they don't have to mow right up to the tree.
Nancy in Lake Nabagamon wonders, is it better to water container plants in the morning or the evening, especially when the air temperature is very warm?
Okay, if it's very warm, I would say it doesn't really make any difference. I would do it in the evening. If you water them in the morning, it may keep the foliage wet longer and you'll have more disease problems. Even with containers, though, feel the soil. Feel if it's dry. If it's dry, then you water it heavy, and then you let them dry out. You just don't water every day with a container. Now, there are some containers where the container's exposed, and the soil gets very warm, and the water evaporates really fast. But with most containers, if you water them heavy, every other day is enough or every third day. But it depends on whether they're in the shade or in the sun, whether the container's exposed or whether the plants are draping over the container. But put your finger down in the soil. If the soil feels moist, don't water it. If it feels dry, then water it heavy, and then let it dry out between waterings.
Janice in Antioch, Illinois has a question for you. Hi, Janice.
Hi. Thank you so much. I have established blueberry plants that are becoming in a shady area, and can they be moved?
What I would do right now, yes, they can be moved. How big are they?
3 feet tall, maybe.
Yeah, they can be moved up. Blueberries have a very shallow root system. What I would do now, though, to ensure that they can get moved, you don't move them when they're in full growth like this, but take a shovel and around where you're going to dig the plant out, drive the shovel into the soil and cut some of the roots, because what will then happen is new roots will be initiated inside where you cut the old roots off. And that way you'll have more feeder roots when you dig the plant up, and you'll have a better chance of the plant making it through.
Great.
Okay.
I have one other question about peonies.
Okay.
Peonies, can they be moved?
Best now if you wait until mid-September. You can move them in early spring before you get much growth, or after the plant has gone semi-dormant. If you move them now, I would say you probably have a 50-50 chance of them making it through.
Yeah. We had some peonies we had to move, and we just moved them, and they don't look very good.
No, you got to fertilize them and water them now, and they'll look pretty sick all summer long, and they may make it through the winter or not. I mean, they're not going to die as such, but they get weakened, and then the winter takes them out when you transplant them at the wrong time.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Arlene in New Berlin, on to you now. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I need to find out what I have growing on the west side of my property. The clump is about 4 feet high.
Okay.
No flowers on it. And it smells like either lemon or peppermint.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is. It doesn't hit. It's got pointed leaves.
Okay.
And there's in some, you know, and I don't want to pull it out if it's a flower, but I don't know what it is.
Is the bark sort of a cinnamon color?
No, it's not. It's like, it would be like flowers.
Okay.
Oh, so it's a
annual?
I don't know what it is, to tell you the honest to God's truth.
Okay. What I would do is take a couple of the leaves off, put them in a piece of saran cloth and mail it to just Junk Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin, 53957, and put Attention Dick on it, and I'll try to identify it for you. It's really hard to do identifications because I don't have any idea whether it's an annual, a perennial.
Well, most of my garden is perennial, but I'll tell you something. I've had a lot of weeds coming up that I can't keep ahead of either.
Yeah. Well, the old Roundup in the glove trick really helps with weeds.
Well, if you haven't got anything better to do one morning, you can come out and help me.
You can't afford me. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that.
We've got enough in our own lawns and gardens.
Oh, boy, I tell you. Yeah, I was out weeding in the vegetable garden last night. Boy, those little weeds don't take long to come up once you get some rain.
Oh. Kevin in DeForest, it's your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I want to move my, I have a similar question to the peonies. I want to move my strawberry bed.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if I can transplant some of the plants now after they're done bearing.
Yes, I would say, actually, if you're not, some of the strawberries are still haven't bore yet. Yeah, I think you can. What you want to do is dig the plants up, try to keep as much soil as you can with them so that you don't lose all the hair roots. Probably, you know, for sure don't let them, I mean, if they got any kind of fruiting stalks on them, take those off because you don't want them to fruit. And then keep them moist around the plant for about 2 weeks. And then once they start to form their runners, then just let them run. But, yeah, I think strawberries are actually pretty easy to move almost any time.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. An email from Victor. How do I keep weeds from invading my raspberry patch? I consider myself a good gardener, love to weed, but can't seem to get a handle on them in the berry patch. I'm ready to dig them up, yeah. Till and replant. Help.
Yeah, the brambles are a real problem. And, you know, mulch will help. One of the few plants that I had a argument with my dad, he liked to mulch raspberries. But the problem with mulching raspberries is those little picnic beetles that get in the caps of the fruit overwinter really nicely in the mulch in raspberries. But if you've got weed problems, a mulch will help. The old Roundup trick that we were talking about if you've got perennial weeds. But if you're planting raspberries, you've got to make sure that you've got all of the perennial weeds out before you start, because it's very difficult in a raspberry patch to selectively take the perennial weeds out with Roundup. I mean, you got to push everything aside. You got to make sure you don't touch any part of the plant. And perennial weeds are really bad, you know, in a raspberry patch, especially the ones that get tall.
And Janet says, help. I have had several lilacs over the years that are healthy for a number of years, then they begin to produce a lot of flowers, but not many leaves. Eventually they die out. What am I doing?
The old clematis trick. They like to have a very sweet soil, fertilized with the superphosphate. If they're flowering a whole lot, that means that they're under stress. I mean, it was like the question with the wisteria. A plant naturally goes to flowering as heavily as it can when it's under stress. So there's something there. It's either too wet. You know, you've got a hard pan underneath. The soil is too acid. You know, there are a bunch of things that can cause that. But if a plant is under stress and it keeps flowering and flowering and flowering, you know, something is wrong. So maybe a soil test to tell, you know, and then you put in the soil test that you have lilacs there. Maybe there's a situation in that particular area that needs to be corrected. But excessive flowering is always a sign of stress. And so something's wrong there. So, you know, if I were starting, I would use lime. I would use organic matter in the soil. I don't know if I'd fertilize or not. I'd maybe put some superphosphate in because they like to have the roots there. And then if it's a wet area, don't water. If it's a dry area, just water once in a while.
Let's go to Cindy in Green Bay next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I have kind of neglected my garden for the last couple of years due to health issues, but I have so many perennials that look like they need to be divided.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't divide them, is there something, I mean, is something going to happen to them? Will they kill themselves out or strangle each other or what?
Yeah, well, to keep them looking the way that they look in a catalog, or to keep them from growing together, to keep the disease down, because if they get too thick, the dew doesn't dry out. Dividing your perennials every few years is pretty essential. I mean,
I have daylilies.
Okay.
I know you just talked about peonies, and you said to do that in early spring. And did you say or later fall?
Yeah, with daylilies, you can do it in probably late August, early September. We start sending out daylilies actually in mid-August. We do our iris first, and then the daylilies and the iris and daylily orders and perennials, and then we add the peonies to it after in mid-September after the eyes form. But for the most part, daylilies can be transplanted anytime. They're very hard to very hard to kill.
Okay, and then I was wondering about irises. I don't know what kind of irises I have. Someone gave me some, mm-hmm. and they just kind of took over in one of my flower beds.
Right.
I know that he gave them to me, and I threw them under a cedar tree.
Right.
And I planted them, like, months afterwards, and they just flourished.
Yep.
So can I do that? Can I divide irises at any time of the year,
yep. too? Irises, you want to wait 2 to 3 weeks after they bloom, and then you can do that. Now, these are the tall bearded iris?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones that blossomed about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can start dividing those anytime now.
Okay, and can you tell me why I see everybody else's irises standing nice and tall and showing off their bloom, and all of mine face the ground about 2 inches from the ground?
Because you probably have dwarf iris. There are some varieties of German iris that only get maybe 4 to 6 inches high.
Oh, no. These are really tall irises.
Oh, they are.
It's just that...
They're in the shade?
No.
They're in the sun.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
I have some in the front and some in the back, and the back is south-facing, and they both fall. It's like their bloom, instead of staying nice and tall, bends over and almost touches the ground.
Are they overcrowded?
Probably.
Yeah, see, you probably got too many stalks for the amount of stuff that can be done. They may be older varieties, too, that don't have the stiff stalks that the newer hybrids do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. And hostas, can I divide those anytime too?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Yep. Bill and Antigo, on to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi. So I was wondering, we have a vegetable garden. What would be wrong with using just grass clippings for mulch?
Okay. Have you used herbicides in them? In the grass?
No.
Okay. Then you can use it as mulch, although... if you can mix it with some other kind of organic matter, what grass does, grass is mostly the stuff that decomposes. It's mostly cellulose. And so if you just put grass on top, it can become a pretty slimy mess if all you're using is grass. So if you mix it with hay or straw or leaves, you know, if you've got a compost pile, if you just mix it in with the other compost and then put it on your garden, you'll do fine. And we're to the point now where the soil is warm. You don't want to do it while the soil is cold. You know, now is the time you can start mulching your tomatoes and peppers and stuff now that the soil is warm.
Okay. Super.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks
for calling.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Just wanted to remind everybody that the first hour of Garden Talk on Saturdays at 7 airs here on the Ideas Network. So you can let your friends know that you have listened to Garden Talk, and if they want to catch the first hour of Garden Talk, they can do it on Saturday morning at 7. I actually have quite a few people who don't hear the Friday show, but actually hear the repeat of the first hour, at least, on Saturday. So that's kind of cool. And, Dick, it's always a great pleasure. And, again, your website, what's your website again now?
It's just www.jungseed.com.
Jungseed.com.
Yep.
There we go. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry. I do enjoy it.
It's always great fun. He knows a lot, doesn't he? It's really a lot of fun to have Dick with us, and we'll certainly have him back. Again, just to remind you that we have our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mehler Show. Somebody asked me how to spell Mehler. It's M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Go to the Larry Mehler Show. I also have a personal page up, and that's just Larry Mehler. But if you want to go to the Larry Mehler Show, you'll get updates. And it's if you click like, then you will get the regular updates on what's going on with the show. Taking a look ahead Monday, Dean Bacopoulos joins us to talk with us about his new novel, My American Unhappiness. I've been reading it. It's really a lot of fun. And then at 11:45, we'll take a lighthearted look at gardening with the authors of Garden Rules. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.